Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is now 2:20 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 10th. We had a significant bounce in stock markets in here today and a pullback in the bond markets. I thought we'd kick off by looking at the UK 2-year. It briefly traded in negative territory yesterday and has subsequently, the yield bounced from that area, and we've had some weakness come through, particularly following the very clear overbought condition that we've had, and this is true of a lot of the bond markets. But on the other hand, we have the clear potential for the UK, just to take as an example, for the UK budget to represent a massive fiscal boost, for the Treasury to issue a huge quantity of debt, and the clear intention of the government to take advantage of extremely low interest rates in order to really create a war chest to fight the impending acceleration in the number of cases of the coronavirus. The government has pretty much given up on containment and is moving on to mitigation. There is obviously the continued challenge of exiting the EU and creating a competitive economic situation for the UK in view of that. And then, of course, you have the global slowdown on the back of the coronavirus. So certainly there is a clear rationale for why any government wouldn't take advantage of the rates on offer to increase the quantity of debt in issuance by a substantial amount. That would be the smart thing to do at these kinds of levels, and it's probably going to be necessary in order to boost the store of investor confidence. Now, when we look at, for example, the FTSE 100, it has pulled back by in the order of about 23% over the course of the last couple of months. The bigger picture is that it has failed to sustain the breakout, and it is now trading significantly below the 7,000 level. Now, when you've got a short-term oversold condition like this, there is clear scope for a rebound. But then the big picture question is going to be whether it is it going to find support soon, but is not whether it's going to find support soon, but rather is it going to encounter resistance at 7,000, having broken below it. When we look at the Europe Stock 600, it's a very similar condition. We've had a failed upside break above the 400 level. It has come straight back down to test the lower side of the range. Now the question is, are we going to find support here? And if we find support here, is it going to be able to sustain a move back above that trend mean as well? On these long-term charts, this moving average is a 1,000-day moving average or a 60-month moving average, essentially a 5-year moving average. The problem is that it could potentially be a type 3 top formation, and that is something we need to pay attention to. We have clear ranging time and size. We have a failed upside break, a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. It is for the bulls to prove in here. There is, I think, clear scope for a rebound to come through over the course of the next few days because of the clear potential that the Eurozone is now on the cusp of abandoning its commitment to contain fiscal deficits. With the ramping up of the number of cases of the coronavirus in Italy, Germany, France, Spain, then the requirement for fiscal stimulus is going to become progressively more, intense. It virtually ensures we're going to have a continued massive reaction in terms of the official response to the coronavirus. Now, the one important thing to remember about any viral outbreak is that it will eventually run its course. Whether that is the result of it will be complete saturation in terms of the entire population, and that will obviously take a significant toll on older people Or is it going to eventually peter out? Or will there be a vaccine brought into effect? All of these are potential solutions. Obviously, some are worse than others, but the most important thing is it doesn't last forever. But some of the monetary and fiscal solutions being proposed at present have got the decided tint of being anything but temporary in nature. And that is something that we do need to pay attention to. I would say that when we look at the reporting of cases, we're seeing some of the exact same kinds of practices in force today as were evident during the Spanish flu. The reason it's called the Spanish flu has been widely popularized recently, and it's because Spain was neutral during the First World War, and they didn't have any kind of censorship on negative news, so they reported the cases as they appeared. There was similar outbreaks in the USA and right across Europe, but they weren't reporting on them, so that was obviously a significant issue. In China right now, they've stopped counting. In South Korea, they have the kind of face-saving measures that are characteristic of Asian and indeed the US right now. So it's certainly not, I think it's a mischaracterization to refer to face-saving measures as being purely Asian, and I would apologize for that. But what we can certainly think about is that Italy is one of the only countries that has got a clear incentive to be accurate in terms of its reporting of the number of cases. Because the worse the news is, the greater the possibility is that the fiscal situation that they have been confined to is going to be relaxed. And the shutting down of the entire country, the quarantining of the whole country, is a very considerable measure, but it is in view of the fact that the mortality rate in Italy right now is approximately 5%, and not least because they have a very large number of people that are elderly. We've already seen that when the coronavirus gets into retirement homes, it rips through the population and it is extremely deadly for elderly people. Now, when we look at what's going on in China, I think it is rather important to bear that in mind. The CSI 300 has been really quite firm, and it is part of the Chinese government's policy of trying to reinstill investor confidence in China that the stock market be firm. Bull markets in China are state-sponsored, and that is exactly what we're seeing right now. So there is the clear scope here that China is going to be the clear relative strength leader coming out of this corrective phase. But that comes at a cost, and the cost is essentially going to be euthanasia, because China has stopped counting cases, and they are basically accepting that there is going to be a saturation of the coronavirus in their population, and they're willing to sacrifice a percentage of their population in order to sustain economic growth. Now, that is a macabre conclusion, but it is the only rational conclusion to what they are in fact doing. And what that suggests is that China is buying a safe haven in terms of investments for the international community. The kind of sacrifice they're willing to make in service to economic growth is probably going to be something that lends a great deal of assistance to the global economy. So what happens in China, however distasteful it might be, is certainly worth paying attention to. At the other end of the scale, we have India, and they don't seem to be counting cases at all. Well, that is rather unfortunate considering the size of the population and the underdeveloped condition of the Indian healthcare system. The number of cases doubled from small numbers in Pakistan in here today. It's quite likely that numbers are doubling in short order in India too. That represents a significant risk here, and the stock market is quite likely to be positive tomorrow based upon the rebound we've had on Wall Street, but it has broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. There is a short-term oversold condition, but the big question now is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean. The low oil price and the more deflationary environment we have overall is likely to be beneficial for India because it will afford them the possibility of cutting interest rates and embarking on fiscal stimulus. But there is a clear risk that the coronavirus is going to represent a very significant downside risk in the short term for India. I think that that is a clear risk at this stage. When we look at what's been going on in the energy markets, the oil price was up in here today, and it has pretty much unwound the traded period, at least, of the decline yesterday. So up about $3.30 in a very short-term oversold condition. We haven't yet seen the flood of supply that Saudi Arabia and Russia have promised, but it is certainly coming, and that is likely to inhibit any real potential for a sustained rally in the oil price. Commodity-related currencies took a dive yesterday, recouped some of that decline, but then were lower again in here today, the Australian dollar being a clear example of that. The Canadian dollar has, and this is going to be shown with the dollar breaking higher, was also in additional positive territory in here today. So that is going to take a toll on the Canadian dollar with low oil prices. The Brazilian real has bounced off its lows, and there is the potential for some consolidation in here. It's very similar with the Mexican peso, but considering that it's unlikely we're going to see a meaningful oil rally, and at least it's unlikely that a meaningful oil rally would be sustained, then there is the potential here that we're going to see commodity-related currencies continue to weaken despite their short-term oversold conditions and near-term scope for some distribution. The Australian stock market pulled back violently over the last 3 weeks, and it is really very oversold in the short term, and it was off the lows in here today and finished in positive territory. Now, I think this is a good example, because what we are seeing right now is a preponderance of massive reactions against the prevailing trend. We have it very clearly on the ASX 200. We have it similarly very clearly in the region, S&P 500. We've seen it in the FTSE 100. We've seen it in the Euro stocks. So I think it is important to consider what's going through the minds of investors when they get these massive reactions against the prevailing trend. On the one hand, there are going to be the people who have been conditioned by the bull market to buy the dip. And they're going to see a pullback, which is almost 20%, and say, well, every time the market has pulled back by this amount in the course of the last 10 years, it's been a buying opportunity, so I'm going to buy. And they have got history on their side, and in a bull market, buying the dip works. In fact, it is by far the most successful strategy in any bull market. The shock and awe of a massive reaction against the prevailing trend is surprising, and it leaves people dazed, and they start to think about, well, what's really changed? And there will clearly be the rationale that, well, golly, this coronavirus thing is obviously got a lot of people worried, but isn't it going to be temporary? And isn't there a wall of new liquidity coming into the market? And every time there's been a wall of liquidity hit the market, the value of my assets has increased, so this must be a buying opportunity. Then there are going to be the people that think, well, we've just had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and that was a really scary event, and I'm not going to be buying anymore. I'm just going to hang around, wait, and see. So there are definitely going to be some people who stop buying. And then there are also going to be the people that think, well, valuations were pretty rich to begin with, and there are a lot of things I was worried about last year, like the fallen angels problem with so much debt, half of all corporate debt being one rung above junk, and there's clearly the scope for some downgrades coming in the next few months. There is obviously the problem that we're late in the cycle, and this is a very big move already. And what about maybe there is the possibility that central banks are pushing on a string and lowering interest rates is going to do nothing to support the potential for consumer sentiment to deteriorate. So that's obviously the bearish way of thinking about it, and they're going to say, well, I think it's time to sell. So you've got a range of different conditions following a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Some people are going to be thinking it's a buy, and some people are going to think, well, nothing has really changed that much, and others are going to be saying it's a sell. And because those arguments can be relatively easily balanced, it's very likely there's going to be a range that forms after a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And for the S&P 500, and indeed for a lot of other indices, the question is whether that range is going to be able to rally significantly back above the 200-day moving average. When we look at the decade-long trend, the reactions towards the 1,000-day moving average have on balance been excellent buying opportunities. So there are certainly going to be investors thinking along those lines. On each of the occasions that it came back to the 1,000-day moving average, it has bounced in a very emphatic fashion. And it has pushed straight back up to the region above the 200-day moving average. So if this is a short-term low, and I think it is a short-term low with the upside key day reversal on the S&P 500, we should anticipate that if it rallies, it is going to go straight back up above the 200-day moving average and consolidate above the 3,000 level. And if that occurs, then we can conclude we have a medium-term low. The mitigating factors for thinking that that might not be the case is we've had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and we have a clear failed upside break, and those represent clear inconsistencies. So this trend now, which had been really quite consistent until approximately the end of February for the previous decade, is no longer consistent. There are significant trend inconsistencies that have evolved, and it is certainly for the bulls to prove that we are still in a bull market environment. Now, if we get a range forming below the 200-day moving average, and we have evidence of the 200-day moving average now representing resistance rather than support, and we subsequently get a move below the 1,000-day moving average, well, then we're talking about a completed Type 2 top formation and the end of an 11-year bull market. So that, I think, would be something we need to be particularly alert to. So short term, there is clear scope for a rebound because we are deeply oversold and there are new stimulative measures being announced by governments and central banks around the world on a daily basis. So that is going to flood the market with additional liquidity. The willingness of central banks to increase the size of their balance sheets will be key to that. and the Federal Reserve has been making additional money available through the repo market, and they boosted it to 150 billion yesterday. And the size of the Fed's balance sheet is next going to be updated tomorrow. So we will see what that is entailing. Now let's think about the unwinding of carry trades represented by the clear rally by the euro, which pulled back violently in here today. So there is certainly some the risk-off environment that's been present for the last 2 weeks is now starting to unwind somewhat. The yen was also meaningfully weaker in here today, so that's an additional evidence of some short covering beginning to take place. Well, we also have the fact that the treasury bond market was a little bit weaker in here today, although I am rather cautious to think that it's going to have a meaningful pullback against a background where the demand for some form of safe haven is going to be rather intense as the number of cases continues to ramp higher. With some of the risk-off environment, though, being taken off in here today, then gold prices were a little weaker and down about $30. But so far, this has been a rather inert environment for gold, and there is a continued bid from the total assets of ETFs, which have been trending higher, are at new all-time highs, and now represent the third largest holdings in the world for gold. So this is a significant development which continues to support a bull market in the gold price. Then, when we look at the gold shares, they are firming from the region of the trend mean. The collapse in oil prices is something that is going to boost their profitability meaningfully against a background where the gold price itself has been really quite firm. It suggests that gold miners are going to surprise on the upside with their earnings when they start reporting in April. That, I think, is going to be rather transformative for the sector. And the other point, of course, is that it boosts the ability of miners to increase supply. That is particularly true in the industrial metals, and the LME Metals Index was at a new low in here yesterday. The low oil price is going to allow marginal producers to remain operational for a little longer, and that will continue to boost supply. But what we are also seeing in the soft commodity sector is that coffee is now bouncing from the region of the trend mean. Sugar prices are also bouncing from the region of the trend mean. So we've had a meaningful pullback in some of the soft commodities, but we are now starting to see some evidence of support coming through. Meanwhile, grains and beans remain pretty quiet. What this movement we're seeing in markets is telling us is that there is certainly potential for a snapback because of the very deep oversold conditions we have. The massive reactions against the prevailing trend, though, are a warning. They tell us that we've had significant inconsistencies. The number of failed upside breaks, massive reactions against the prevailing trend, those tell us that we have to be alert to top formation development. We have certainly got scope for a rebound, and how far that rebound goes is going to give us a lot of information about what to expect. We know that there is a raft of assistance coming, and the Trump administration floating the idea that they're going to suspend payroll taxes until November. Well, that would be a clear gambit to try and buy the election. But of course, it would also be really quite supportive of consumer sentiment. So if buy the dip has been the go-to strategy for the last decade, then Amazon today bouncing from the region of the trend mean will be a signal to a substantial number of investors that buying the dip is very much in vogue. If Amazon can sustain a move back above 2000, then that is going to lend additional credence to the view that we've had a big pullback and not much more than that. On the other hand, if it fails and it breaks its sequence of higher reaction lows, well then we will have clear evidence of top formation completion. So we're at a critical juncture for a substantial number of shares. One of the reasons why retail investors have not taken fright at the rather incredible volatility we've had in markets is because the FANG index has not broken down. In fact, the NYSE FANG Plus index has just come back to test the upper side of the underlying trading range, and that is pretty similar to the condition that the NASDAQ 100 has been able to perform. And as long as the NASDAQ is still finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average, then it's still in a medium-term bull market. And that also helps to highlight that technology is the only game in town right now, and that narrowing of breath is also evidence that we are towards the latter stages of this bull market. And I think that is something we do need to pay attention to. So I'll leave you with that for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.